See figure 5.13. Prana is the Sanskrit word for life force. Yogis have known about this tube, which is not a physical structure but an energetic one, for thousands of years. This tube is considered etheric because of the electrical information in the spine that constantly moves through it. The more energy moves in the physical spinal cord, the more energy is created as light in this tube. And the more energy created in this tube, the more energy moves in the spine and the greater the expression of life. Sometimes when I teach this meditation, people will say to me, "I don't really feel my prana tube." Well, you don't really feel your left ear either until you put your attention on it, right? So when I ask you to contract your muscles and pull that energy up, you'll be pulling it up through the spine and creating a more powerful prana tube along your spinal cord. It's important to add here that this is not a passive breath. It's an extremely active, passionate process. Moving this stored energy, energy that has been stored for years and years, maybe even decades, takes an act of intention and will. To evolve your limited survival emotions, as an alchemist turns base metals like lead into gold, you are taking self-limiting emotions like anger, frustration, guilt, suffering, grief, and fear, and turning them into elevated emotions, such as love, gratitude, and joy. Other elevated emotions to consider tapping into include inspiration, excitement, enthusiasm, fascination, awe, inspiration, wonder, appreciation, kindness, abundance, compassion, empowerment, nobility, honor, invincibility, uncompromising will, strength and freedom, not to mention divinity itself, being moved by the spirit, trusting in the unknown or in the mystic or the healer within you. Remember, evolving this energy takes a level of intensity that is greater than the body as the mind, greater than your addiction to any survival emotion. You must be inspired to become more energy than matter, using your body as an instrument of consciousness to ascend your energy. So don't let your body be your mind. Remember that you are liberating your stuck energy, turning guilt or suffering or anger or aggression into pure energy. And as the body liberates that energy, you're freeing yourself, and you will feel overjoyed, in love with life, and inspired to be alive. As you pull this energy up the spine in this meditation, you'll follow your breath all the way to the top of your head. When it gets there, I want you to hold your breath while you keep squeezing those muscles in your perineum and your abdomen. When you do that, you increase the pressure inside your spinal cord and spinal column. That pressure, called intrathecal pressure, is inside a closed system. It's the same pressure you exert when you take a breath and lift something heavy. You're pushing against your insides. But in this breath, you'll be very specifically directing all that pressure, all that energy, and all that spinal fluid up your spine and into your brain. When that pressurized fluid reaches the back of your brainstem, all of a sudden the lower brain centers like the brainstem, cerebellum, and limbic brain open up to this energy through a cluster of nuclei called the reticular formation. That energy then passes through the thalamic gate up to the thalamus, the part of the brain that relays signals from the sensory receptors, located in the midbrain, which serves as a junction box. Next, all of that stored energy moves directly into your higher brain center, the neocortex. That's when gamma waves begin to occur. When the energy reaches the thalamus, it is also relayed to the pineal gland, and something amazing happens. That gland releases some very powerful elixirs, one of which anesthetizes the analytical mind and thinking brain. See figure 5.14, which shows the thalamus, the reticular formation, the thalamic gate, and the moment of energy hitting the higher brain centers. We'll talk more about the pineal gland in a later chapter, but for right now, know that when that happens, it's like an orgasm in your head. This is a very powerful energy that has been called the movement of the Kundalini. I personally don't like to use that word because it may conjure up opinions or beliefs from a limited understanding of this energy that may discourage some people from doing the breath, but I do want you to understand that this is the energy you are evoking with this breath. If you look at graphic 6B4 in the color insert, you can see the area surrounding the pineal gland is quite active at the student producing gamma brainwaves. Look at the blue arrows. The red area suggests the activation of energy in the pineal gland, as well as a region of the limbic brain associated with strong emotions and formation of new memories. Graphic 6B5 is a three-dimensional picture of the same student's brain. Once again, the pineal area shows a significant amount of energy coming from inside the brain. Embracing elevated emotions. You've just read how the breathing exercise in this chapter pulls the mind out of the body, as it liberates stored energy from the first three energy centers, the centers of survival. Once you do that, it's time to recondition the body to a new mind, the second part of the meditation, which involves attaining elevated emotional states. I want to clarify here why embracing elevated emotions is so powerful. As you've learned from our discussion about genes in the second chapter, we now know that it's the environment that signals the gene, not the other way around. If an emotion is the end product of an experience in the environment, it is the emotion that turns gene expression on or off. When you embrace these elevated emotions in this meditation, what you are actually doing is signaling your genes ahead of the environment. The body doesn't know the difference between an emotion created by an experience you are having in the outside environment and an experience you are creating internally by embracing this new elevated emotion. So when you embrace that elevated emotion and think thoughts that are greater than the self-limiting ones that kept you stuck in the past, your body begins to prepare chemically for the future because it thinks that future is happening now. In other words, if you do the meditation correctly enough times, the body responds as though the healing or any condition you are manifesting in your environment has already taken place. These elevated emotions have a higher and faster frequency than more base emotions like guilt, fear, jealousy, and anger. And since all frequency carries information, when we change the frequency, we change our energy. That new energy can then carry new information, a new consciousness or set of intentions or thoughts. The more elevated the emotion, the faster the frequency, and the more you feel like energy instead of matter, and the more energy becomes available to create a more coherent energy field, shifting further away from disease and more towards health, or for that matter, towards signaling any gene. When your emotions are self-limiting, on the other hand, they have a lower frequency, and you feel more like matter instead of energy, and then it takes more time to create change in your life. Here's an example. If at some point in the past you were shocked, betrayed, or traumatized by an event with a high emotional charge that has left you feeling pain or sadness or fear, chances are that experience has been branded into your biology in numerous ways. It's also possible that the genes that were activated by this experience might keep your body from healing. So in order for you to change your body into a new genetic expression, the inner emotion you create has to be greater than the emotion from the past outer experience. The energy of your empowerment or the amplitude of your inspiration must be greater than your pain or sadness. Now you are changing the inner environment of the body, which is the outer environment of the cell. The genes for health can be upregulated, while the genes for disease can be downregulated. The more profound the emotion, the louder you're knocking on your genetic door, and the more you're going to signal those genes to change the structure and function of your body. That's how it works. We can actually prove this because in one of our 2017 advanced workshops in Tampa, we measured gene expression in a randomized selection of 30 workshop participants. The results showed that our students were able to significantly change the expression of 8 genes over the course of the 4-day workshop by changing their internal states. There is only one possibility in 20 that the results were due to chance. That's the threshold of significance that statisticians usually use. The functions of these genes are far-ranging. They're involved in neurogenesis, the growth of new neurons in response to novel experiences and learning, protecting the body against various influences that tend to age cells, regulating cell repair, including the ability to move stem cells to those sites in the body where they are needed to repair damaged or aging tissue, building cellular structures, especially the cytoskeleton, the framework of rigid molecules that give our cells shape and form, eliminating free radicals and so decreasing oxidative stress associated with aging and many major health conditions, and helping our bodies identify and eliminate cancerous cells, thereby suppressing the growth of cancer tumors. Activating the genes for neurogenesis was particularly significant because most of the time our students were in meditation. They were so present in their inner world of imagination that their brains believed they were in the actual event. See figure 5.15 below to learn what each of these genes does and why it is important for our health. If our students have changed their gene expression by creating elevated emotions in just a few days, imagine what you can do if you practice this meditation for a few weeks. By using this breath technique to release the familiar emotions stored in the body from years of thinking and feeling the same way, and then by emotionally rehearsing new states every day, with practice, these unlimited emotions will become the new normal for you. Your brain will think different thoughts equal to those elevated emotions. Finally, by embracing these unlimited emotions instead of the same limited ones, when you understand that you are signaling new genes and making new proteins that are responsible for the change in structure and function of your body, you can assign more meaning to what you are doing. That leads to a greater intention, which creates an even greater outcome. It is a scientific fact that we use about 1.5% of our DNA. The rest is called junk DNA. There is a principle in biology called endowment that holds that nature never wastes anything that it is not going to use. In other words, if the junk DNA is there, there must be a reason. Otherwise, nature, in its infinite wisdom, would have evolved it away. Because the universal law is, if you don't use it, you lose it. So think of your genes as a library of potentials. There are infinite combinations of gene variations that can be expressed in those latent genes. They are waiting for you to activate them. There are genes for an unlimited genius mind, for longevity, for immortality, for an uncompromising will, for the capacity to heal, for having mystical experiences, for regenerating tissues and organs, for activating the hormones of youth so you have greater energy and vitality, for photographic memory, and for doing the uncommon, just to name a few. It's all equal to your imagination and creativity. As you signal any of those genes ahead of the environment, your body will express a greater potential by expressing new genes to make new proteins for a greater expression of life. So when I ask you to feel certain elevated emotions, when you recondition the body to a new mind, know that as you embrace each emotion, you are knocking on your own genetic door. So I invite you to surrender to the process and fully engage in the experience. Reconditioning the body to a new mind meditation. Before we start the formal meditation, we're going to do some practice sessions. They build on several individual instructions so you can learn this step by step. Once you've mastered each individual step, we can put it all together. So let's start by sitting up straight in a chair and putting both feet flat on the floor, or sitting on the floor in the lotus cross-leg position with a pillow under your buttocks. Place your hands uncrossed in your lap. If you like, you can close your eyes. When you're ready to begin, lift up your perineum, your pelvic floor, the same muscles that you use for intercourse and elimination. Do not hold your breath as you do this. Breathe normally. Squeeze those muscles as tightly as you can and hold for 5 seconds. Then let go and relax. Do it again and hold it for the same amount of time. Do it a third time, holding it for about 5 seconds and then relax again. I want you to gain conscious control over these muscles because you are going to be using them in a different way. Now, contract the same muscles in the perineum and at the same time, contract the muscles in your lower abdomen. Pull your lower abdomen up and in, locking down these first two centers. Hold for 5 seconds and then relax. Pull those same muscles up and in again and squeeze. Hold for 5 seconds again and then relax. Repeat this once more. Remember to keep breathing as you do this. Don't hold your breath. Now this next time, squeeze the muscles of your perineum and at the same time squeeze the muscles of your lower abdomen while also contracting the muscles of your upper abdomen. You're tightening your entire core now, the first three centers. Hold all of those muscles for 5 seconds and relax. Do this again, pulling the muscles in a little more this time. Hold for 5 seconds and then relax. Now do it one more time. And as you squeeze and hold those muscles, see if you can squeeze them a little tighter and lift them a little higher. Hold for a while and then relax. Since experience creates neurological networks in your brain, as you perform each step and build on the previous one, you are installing the neurological hardware in your brain in preparation for the experience. I am asking you to use the same muscles that you might have used for years, but now in a different way. This action will begin to milk these centers and liberate energy that's been stored in your body for a very long time. Now we're going to change it up. Take your finger and place it on the top of your head and work your fingernail right into the center of your scalp so you will remember where that point is once you take your finger away. Remember that where you place your attention is where you place your energy. So that point is your target. Put your hands back in your lap and without contracting any muscles yet, take one slow, steady breath through your nose. All I want you to do is follow your breath from your perineum, through your lower abdomen, through your upper abdomen, through the center of your chest, through your throat, through your brain, all the way to the top of your head where your finger was. When you get to the top of your head, hold your breath and keep your attention right on the top of your head and let your energy follow your awareness. Hold for about 10 seconds and then relax. Place your finger on the top of your head again, then take it away and make sure you can feel that point without your finger there. Rest your hands on your thighs. Now do one more breath without contracting any muscles. This time when you inhale through your nose, imagine you are pulling energy up that tube like drawing fluid up a straw, all the way to the top of your head. When you get to the top of your head, hold your breath for about the same amount of time you did before, and let your energy follow your awareness. Then relax. Now it's time to start putting it all together. With this next breath, when you inhale through your nose, pull those muscles up and in at the exact same time. Start by locking the muscles of your perineum, engaging the muscles of your lower abdomen, and simultaneously contracting the muscles in your upper abdomen. And as you squeeze the muscles in each center, with the intention of pulling all that stored energy in the lower body into the brain, follow your breath through each of those three centers. As you continue to squeeze those muscles and lock those first three centers down, pull your breath up through your chest, the fourth center, then through your throat, the fifth center, then through your brain, the sixth center. Pull it all the way up to the top of your head. Keep your attention there and hold your breath as you keep squeezing your core muscles. Hold for about 10 seconds and then relax as you exhale. Repeat that breath at least two more times, tightening the muscles of your first three centers as you pull your breath up your spine through each energy center, all the way to the top of your head. Then hold your breath for a time and finally relax as you exhale. Remember, as you do this, you're using your body as an instrument of consciousness, and your full intent should be to pull the mind out of the body. You're liberating energy that has been locked in your lower three centers and moving it up to the higher centers where you can use it for healing your body or creating something new instead of just for survival. Practicing this many times so you are very familiar with these steps will be very useful before you begin several of the meditations in this book. Be patient with yourself. Just like learning anything for the first time, you have to do this many times before you truly master it. In the beginning, it may feel awkward because you have to synchronize the actions of your body with the intention of your mind. Eventually, though, if you practice this technique enough, you will be able to coordinate all these steps into one motion. I'm aware there are many different breathing techniques, and you may well have had success with one or more of them in the past. Even so, I urge you to try this one, even if you already have some other favorite, because if you do something new, you can have a new experience. If you keep doing the same thing, you'll keep creating the same experience. And if you do nothing, you get nothing. Yet, this technique takes some real effort. But once you become more skilled, you'll see it's worth the effort and then some. You are now ready to begin the formal meditation. If you purchase my Reconditioning the Body to a New Mind CD or audio download from drjoedispenza.com, you'll find the recording includes a song I've specifically chosen to truly inspire you to raise your energy. As you listen, I want you to interpret the music as the movement of energy. If you do the meditation on your own, practice the breath while you listen to one inspiring song that's between 4 and 7 minutes long. Then open your focus, putting your attention on different parts of your body, as well as the space around those parts of the body. Next, unfold as pure consciousness into the unified field, staying in the generous present moment and becoming no body, no one, no thing, nowhere, and in no time. Now it's time to cultivate several elevated emotions one by one, emotionally rehearsing each. Remember, the more powerful your feelings, the more you are upregulating your own genes. Bless your body, bless your life, bless your soul, bless your future as well as your past. Bless the challenges in your life and bless the intelligence within you that is giving you life. Finish by giving thanks for a new life before it has been made manifest. Chapter 6, Case Studies, Living Examples of Truth. Over the years, I've found that stories serve a great purpose, to reinforce information in a practical manner. Hearing about someone else's experience makes it more real for us. Once we can relate to the challenges and triumphs a person has along their journey from one state of consciousness to another, we start to believe a similar experience can happen for us. Stories also make the ideas from the teachings become less philosophical and more personal. The case studies that you're about to read concern real people who have applied the information you just learned in the previous chapters. They first understood the concepts as intellectual knowledge in their minds, then they applied it and experienced it in their bodies, and finally, they turned it into wisdom in their souls. For these students to accomplish such supernatural changes, they ultimately had to master some aspect or limitation in themselves. And if they could do it, so can you. Ginny heals her chronic back and leg pain. On December 9, 2013, Ginny was driving on the highway in Las Vegas when a car was hit from behind. Even though she slammed on the brakes, the impact catapulted her car into the car in front of her, resulting in a double impact. She immediately felt a burning sensation in her lower back as pain shot down her right leg. When the paramedics arrived, she described her pain as moderate, but over the next few days, the pain increased until it was constant and severe. Most of her pain was in her lower lumbar spine, caused by two herniated discs, L4 and L5. She also felt pain radiating all the way down her right leg to her foot. Ginny saw a chiropractor 3 times a week, but the pain worsened. She then saw a pain management doctor who prescribed muscle relaxants, Neurontin, a nerve pain medication, and Mobic, a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug. After 9 months, the pain was still intense, so she had injections in her back. They didn't help. As a result, Ginny had difficulty walking and found driving almost impossible. She also had trouble sleeping, managing to get only 4 or 5 hours a night. The constant pain in her lower back became worse when she was sitting, lifting something, or standing for long periods of time. Sometimes she could sit for only 20 minutes at a time. Because of all of this, she spent most of her days in bed, where she was able to find a little relief when lying on her right side with her knees bent. Ginny was unable to care for her 2 children, ages 3 and 5, and she was also unable to work as much as she had before. She depended on her husband to drive her places since she could no longer drive herself. All of these factors created serious financial problems and emotional stress for the whole family. Ginny became depressed and angry at life. Although she had attended her first workshop with me before the accident and had been doing her meditations, after the accident she stopped meditating regularly because the pain got too severe and she said she couldn't sit or concentrate. After 2 years, her doctor suggested lumbar surgery to repair the herniated discs. If that didn't work, he said, Ginny could consider additional surgery, including spinal fusion. She decided to go ahead with the initial surgery. In the meantime, Ginny's husband convinced her to attend another one of my advanced seminars in Seattle, which started just 1 week before her surgery date. Staying seated for the flight was painful, but she made it. While Ginny enjoyed seeing her old friends and meeting new ones at the event, she also felt saddened and frustrated because she couldn't muster the same enthusiasm everyone else had. She just wanted to take some painkillers and go to bed. When she was leaving the first night's gathering, her good friend Jill, filled with compassion and hope, said with conviction, "Ginny, you will be healed tomorrow, right here." We started the next day at 6 a.m. Ginny decided to avoid taking any heavy medications so she could be present in the meditations and enjoy the experience. Unfortunately, her pain made it very difficult to focus during the first meditation, and she wondered if the decision to attend had been a mistake. During the second meditation after breakfast, though, things really shifted. Ginny decided to surrender and leave all her judgment behind. The meditation began as usual with the breathing exercise of pulling the mind out of the body, during which I told the participants to focus on 2 or 3 negative emotions or limited aspects of their personality. I asked them to move all that stored energy from the first 3 energy centers up from the base of their spine all the way up to their brain and eventually release it out of the top of their heads. First, Ginny chose to work with her anger, which she believed had been a contributing factor in keeping her body in so much pain. During the meditation, she felt energy moving up her spine and then sensed an intense energy leaving her body through the back of her head. The second thing she picked to work with was her pain. As she worked with the breath to move much of the energy related to her pain from her body to her brain, she felt the same energy she had when she was working with anger, although this time she saw the energy becoming a bright color with purple overtones. Suddenly, she sensed the energy slow down and become less intense. The music changed, and the main part of the meditation began. Ginny was feeling completely relaxed. She had liberated that energy out of her body. As usual, I guided the group to feel different parts of their bodies in space and to sense the space around their bodies. Then I guided them to the infinite black space that is the quantum field. I asked them to become no body, no one, no thing, nowhere, in no time, and to become pure awareness, aware that they are aware in this endless vast space. At first, as I gave the instructions, Ginny had the distinct sense that she was floating. An intense sense of peace and unconditional love overtook her, and she lost track of time and space. She didn't feel her physical body at all, nor did she feel any pain, yet she was fully present and could hear and follow all the instructions I was giving. "I've never experienced anything like that before," she told me later. "It was so profound that it's difficult to put into words. My senses were magnified, and I felt connected to every body, everyone, everything, every place, and every time. I was part of the whole, and the whole was part of me. There was no separation." Ginny got beyond her body, her environment, and time. Her consciousness had connected to the consciousness of the unified field. the place she described where there's only wholeness and there's no separation. She had found the sweet spot of the generous present moment, and her autonomic nervous system stepped in and did the healing for her. In our advanced workshops, our students lie down after every meditation and surrender in order to allow the autonomic nervous system to take over and program their bodies. At the end of this meditation, when I asked everyone to come back to their new bodies, Ginny was surprised to discover she felt absolutely no pain as she got up from the floor to stand, a process that she normally would have needed help with. She started walking without limping, her back straight. We broke for lunch, but Ginny didn't feel like eating much or even talking a lot. She was still overwhelmed with the meditation experience. After 2 years of near constant pain, it felt so freeing to be without it anymore. She started crying tears of joy and confusion simultaneously. She looked for two of her friends to share the good news, including Jill, who had been so sure the night before that Ginny would be healed. They encouraged Ginny to try movements that she hadn't been able to do when she was in pain, and she performed all of them without any pain at all. As the day continued, Ginny's pain stayed away, and she continued to feel connected to the unified field. That evening, Ginny called her husband, who told her that somehow he just knew she'd be able to heal her pain at the workshop. She had a great dinner with her friends, and when she went to bed, she didn't take any of her pain medication or muscle relaxers. She slept through the night for the very first time in years, waking up filled with energy. The next day, I guided the group in a walking meditation, which you will read about and have a chance to try later. Ginny was able to walk straight and tall with no pain or difficulty. Needless to say, she cancelled the surgery, and she has remained pain-free. Daniel deals with electromagnetic hypersensitivity. About 5 years ago, Daniel was, as he put it, a crazy, stressed-out Israeli entrepreneur in his mid-20s who pushed himself daily to work at full power all the way to build a successful business. Working 60-hour weeks was typical for him. One day, while he was raging and yelling at the top of his lungs at a client over the phone, he felt something pop in the right side of his head and he lost consciousness. When he woke, he wasn't sure what had happened or how long he'd been out, but he had the worst headache of his life. He hoped resting would help it go away, but it didn't. Mysteriously, his pain increased exponentially whenever he was near anything that emitted electromagnetic frequencies, including cell phones, laptops, video displays, microphones, cameras, Wi-Fi networks, and cell towers. If someone near him answered a cell phone, Daniel felt it. He'd never before experienced anything like this. In fact, he had previously worked in the computer field and never felt any ill effects from being around electronic equipment of any kind. Daniel saw several different doctors and specialists, but none of them could find anything wrong with him. He went through an extensive battery of blood tests, brain scans, and physical examinations, but every one of the studies came back negative. Some of the doctors didn't believe him and even became condescending, rolling their eyes as if Daniel were making up his symptoms. Some wanted to give him antidepressants, but he wouldn't take them. They told him his pain was all in his head, which, of course, it was, but not in the way the doctors meant. Then Daniel started seeing holistic doctors who suspected he had developed a rare condition called electromagnetic hypersensitivity, EHS. While the existence of EHS is still controversial in the medical community, the World Health Organization recognizes the condition. The mechanism of EHS remains unknown, but when you consider that the brain is 78% water, and that water containing minerals, such as those commonly found in the body including calcium and magnesium, conducts electricity, you can see that for EHS-sensitive people, that natural electromagnetic charge might somehow become amplified around things that signal and emit electromagnetic radiation. Like many others with EHS, Daniel also experienced chronic pain and fatigue in addition to his headaches. He'd sleep for 12 hours and still wake up exhausted. One of the holistic doctors suggested he take 40 nutritional supplements a day to combat the ill effects, but the supplements didn't help. He was still in near constant agony. Before long, Daniel had to close his business. He went into debt and lost everything he had worked so hard to acquire. Finally, he declared bankruptcy and had to move in with his mother. "I basically retreated from life," he told me. "I was a zombie because I couldn't think, I couldn't focus, I couldn't do anything. Nothing I did helped, and whenever I got anywhere near the real world, I got a really strong headache." In fact, Daniel told me that if he was ever near anything that emitted a signal, his headaches would be 1,000 times worse, to the point that he would emotionally break down. Daniel spent most of his time curled up in a ball in his bed in his tiny room in his mother's house, crying from the pain. "I was wasting my life," he said, "watching all my friends get married, have children, get promoted, buy houses, everything." When he began to feel suicidal, his friends and family pushed him to try to find something that would help. Because of